This week on Pirate Party Radio, top search engines including Google, Bing, and Yahoo found guilty in torrent linking case. RIAA and MPAA offer DRM-free downloads of entire back catalog of media. And Real Actatext, officially released, includes copyright term reduction clause to original 14 years. This is just an April Fool's joke. Like those things would ever happen. This week on Pirate Party Radio, 50,000 torrent users being sued in the US and millions more promised to be targeted. Australia blocks WikiLeaks pages and will hand out fines of $11,000 a day for linking to them. And US judge strikes down patent on cancer genes. This is Pirate Party Radio, episode 22 for Thursday, April 1st, 2010.
What do you think about piracy and MP3 and internet, about music?
I think it's great.
Great?
Yeah. I love it. I think it's brilliant, and I'll tell you why. Music should be shared. I believe that this is how music turned into, like, some crazy business. Now, the only part about music that I dislike is the business that is attached to it. Now, if music is free, then there is no business. There's just music. So, I like it. I think that we should share it. It's okay if one person buys it, it's totally cool. Burn it up. Share it with your friends. I don't care. I don't care how you hear it, as long as you hear it. As long as you come to my show and like have a great time and listen to the live show, it's totally cool. I don't mind. I'm happy that they hear it.
I think you are the first singer telling this story to me.
Yeah, because most people...
Brainwashed.
Yeah, they've been brainwashed, but hey, that's definitely a perfect word for it.
We are under siege. They are doing everything they can to prevent progress, to prevent the spread of culture, and to prevent privacy as we know it. The only way to stop this is to unite. This is definitely a global movement. It's continuing to spread across the world like wildfire. We are seeing the birth of a new global political power. There's no way to control the information. There's no way to control culture, control knowledge. And those who control culture and knowledge control the world. And that is losing its last goals. People don't understand how big this really is.
I'm James O'Brien, and welcome to Pirate Party Radio, the official show of the Pirate Party of Canada and the U.S., your source for news around the world on copyright, net neutrality, open government, free culture and speech, patents, privacy, and more. Make sure you check out the Pirate Party Radio forums for links to all the news stories mentioned during the show. And off the top of the show, we had a clip from Joss Stone talking about the difference between the music industry and music itself. And I think I've played a clip of hers before on one of the shows, but this one is equally as good. So check that one out as well. One incoming message. This is about blurred reality shows. This is sent in by Baron. This isn't done to keep the show's producer from getting sued. Logos are sanitized so they don't provide product placements for free. If you watch closely, some reality shows will actively focus on and linger on logos and brand names will be mentioned because they've been paid to show those products. Even without sponsored product placement, logos are blurred so that when a show is sold or syndicated, there's no fear that competing brands will be shown that might offend commercial advertisers. It would be bad to come back from a commercial for Brand A and to a shot of a reality star wearing a shirt or hat advertising Brand B. Always follow the money, Baron says. Yeah, that makes sense. I understand the premise. I wish that in reality that we could blur out these advertisements as well, like put on some virtual reality glasses, and all of a sudden all of the billboards are blurred out, or even better, all white, completely gone, like in almost like in the movie They Live, where it, instead of advertisements for billboards, on billboards it says consume, eat, things like that. But, you know, preferably just all blank and white, or maybe substitute in your favorite movie on top of the billboard or something. Of course, you'd be staring at a billboard for an hour. If you'd like to contact me, ask a question, or leave a comment, just head over to the Pirate Party Radio site at piratepartyradio.com and fill out the feedback form. Now, we have tons of news this week. Tons and tons of news. This is not an April Fool's show, so all this news is real, despite that little intro that was some fake headlines there. The news that I'm going to say is real, even for April 1st, April Fool's Day show. So in pirate news, worldwide free speech news. China's Great Firewall spreads overseas. Sent in by Mind Inversion. A networking error has caused computers in Chile and the U.S. to come under the control of the Great Firewall of China, redirecting Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube users to Chinese servers. Security experts are not sure how this happened, but it appears that at least one ISP recently began fetching high-level DNS information from what's known as root DNS server based in China. That server, operated out of China by a Swedish service provider, NetNod, returned DNS information intended for Chinese users, effectively spreading Chinese network censorship overseas. China's tightly controlled access to a number of websites using technology known colloquially as the Great Firewall of China. The issue was reported Wednesday. Mauricio Erreche, a DNS admin with Nick Chile, who found that an unnamed local ISP reported that DNS queries for sites such as Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube, all of which had been blocked in China, were being redirected to bogus addresses. It's unclear how widespread the problem is. Ereke reported getting the bogus information from three network access points in Chile, one in California, but on Thursday he said that the problem was no longer popping up. The traces show us that we're not hitting the server in China, he wrote in a discussion group post. This issue occurred for some reason. At least one ISP directed DNS request to a root server based in China, network experts say. This is something that the service providers outside of China should not do because it allows China's censored network to leak outside the country. This is particularly troubling to me because I experienced this as well in Canada on that day, and I was looking for posts on the internet that were regarding this, and I found out that this was happening all over the world, that people were being redirected to Chinese firewalled websites. Now, what's more troubling than not being able to access Facebook and YouTube and all these sites is that we're passing information to China now that's redirecting it to some site that probably a honeypot that they're recording all this information that we're trying to get from personal social networking sites. We're passing on, if they're able to capture it, maybe passwords, or maybe they set up something so that you could log in, that they could have done anything. Of course, they were probably unprepared because they didn't know that the world's traffic was going to be redirected to their servers. But if they did know or started to be alerted to it, they could have set up fake sites and started recording this, because who knows how they handle this web traffic inside of China for people in China trying to access these websites. Maybe they're recording it for political dissidents and trying to record this information for use later. Very, very troubling. And from a networking standpoint, it is not a good plan to allow these kinds of rogue servers from other countries, such as China, and now Australia is also censoring websites, not to use their access points in the world or their servers. So it's best to stay out of their realm completely and block off access to censored networks, because you don't know what they're doing with your traffic. And this is a great example of why we should avoid those areas of the world for their internet, because it's poisoned. It's been altered in a way that is unexpected, and we don't know what they're going to be doing with your traffic. They could be censoring it, they could be using it against you, they could be recording it for later, they could be using it for whatever means they want, because it's going to them. Network admin should take note of what has happened here. Privacy news from the US. Facebook's plan to automatically share your data with sites you never signed up for. More bad news for social networking. Sent in by Mind Inversion. In anticipation of a slew of new features that would be launching at F8, today Facebook announced they were once again making changes to its privacy policy. One of the biggest changes that Facebook is making involves applications and third-party websites. We've been hearing whispers from multiple sources about these changes, and the announcement all but confirms what Facebook is planning to do. In short, it sounds like Facebook is going to automatically be opting users into a reduced form of Facebook Connect on certain third-party sites. A bold change that may well unnerve users, at least at first. Here's how Facebook is describing the change in its blog post. Today, when you use applications such as games on Facebook or choose to connect to Facebook on sites across the web, you're able to find and interact with your friends. These applications require a small set of basic information about you in order to provide a relevant experience. After feedback from many of you, we announced in August that we're moving towards a model that gives you clearer controls over what data is shared with applications and websites when you choose to use them. In the proposed privacy policy, we've also explained the possibility of working with some partner websites that we pre-approve to offer a more personalized experience at the moment you visit the site. In such instances, we would only introduce this feature with a small, select group of partners, and we'd also offer new controls. So what does this mean? We've heard that select Facebook partners now will be able to look for your existing Facebook cookie to identify you, even if you never opted into Facebook Connect on the site you're visiting. Using that, the third-party site will be able to display your friends and other key information. It's possible that these sites will also be able to display any data you shared with everyone, which of course is now the default option on Facebook. Facebook's draft privacy policy states that you'll be able to opt out of these sites, and you'll also be able to opt out of these pre-approved experiences entirely. But by default, you're all in. How convenient. Well, how convenient indeed. So people not paying attention to the privacy policies on Facebook are now going to be sharing their data with random websites that Facebook deems trustworthy of all of its users' data. They're going to be passing on your information when you visit a random website that you may not be aware that they're getting your Facebook information. Now, when you share your information with everybody on Facebook, you're assuming that these people on Facebook are Facebook users, not corporations that you've never heard of. So what you really need to do is go through Facebook and look at these settings on your privacy. Drill down, go into every recursive setting, because sometimes they're hidden inside things that are hidden inside things, and go through everything, every setting, all the application settings, and make sure that they're all turned off, or at least you're aware of what things are being shared. Now, even a further step, if you're sick of Facebook going through and just destroying your privacy, another way is to just get rid of all your information on Facebook. Now, how you're going to do that is a little bit difficult, because you have to delete everything. Because if you just delete your Facebook account, say, you know, get rid of it, but all your pictures are there and all your information is there, who's to say what Facebook is going to be doing with that? There's something called the suicide machine that you can go on the internet and it will connect to Facebook with your password and username. If you trust the suicide machine itself, of course, you may want to make sure your password doesn't match any passwords on any of the other sites that you may use, because, you know, good password policies, we want to make sure we're doing that. And what it does is logs in, deletes all your photos, deletes all your friends, deletes everything step by step for you, and then finally deletes your account. Now, who's to say that Facebook doesn't record iterations of each of your Facebook updates, and it can have everything dating back to the first time you logged into Facebook? Who knows, but this is something that you could do if you're sick and tired of all the shenanigans that Facebook is propping up and doing things with opt-in styles. Now, you don't want to associate with companies that do opt-in. You want opt out, actually. It would be nice if you could opt into this and everybody just doesn't, because that's how they're going to work it. They know nobody's going to opt into this, and so they force everybody to opt into it. And you have to opt out. Of course, everybody doesn't know about this. They don't keep up to date. Not everybody listens to the show or reads the news stories about Facebook privacy policies. So everybody's going to be sharing their data with whoever Facebook decides is data worthy. Next story, patent news from the U.S. This is great news. U.S. judge strikes down patent on cancer genes. This is sent in by Mobile Diesel. In a ruling with potentially far-reaching implications for the patenting of human genes, a judge on Monday struck down a company's patents on two genes linked to an increased risk of breast and ovarian cancer. The decision by U.S. District Judge Robert Sweet challenging whether anyone can hold patents on human genes was expected to have broad implications for the biotechnology industry and genetics-based medical research. Sweet said he invalidated the patents because DNA's existence in an isolated form does not alter the fundamental quality of DNA as it exists in the body nor the information it encodes. He rejected arguments that it was also acceptable to grant patents on DNA sequences as long as they are claimed in the form of isolated DNA. Many, however, including scientists in the field of molecular biology and genomics, have considered this practice a lawyer's trick that circumvents the prohibitions on the direct patenting of the DNA in our bodies, but which, in practice, reaches the same results, he said. The judge says his findings were consistent with the Supreme Court rulings that have established that purifying a product of nature does not mean it can be patented. He said the company deserves praise for what it unquestionably a valuable scientific achievement, but not a patent, because the isolated DNA is not markedly different from a native DNA as it exists in nature. The ruling came in a long-running fight between scientists who believe that genes carrying the secrets of life should not be exploited for commercial gain and companies that argue that a patent is a reward for years of expensive research that moves science forward. It was almost sure to be appealed to the second U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in Manhattan. So I applaud Judge Sweet for this ruling because it doesn't make any sense to me, and it doesn't make any sense to the average person on the street, that you can patent something that exists in nature, no matter if you're the first person to find it or the fifth person to find it. If I go into the woods and find a new species of animal, a mammal or something, and I can't just patent it because I found it, or I can't patent it because I looked at it under a microscope, because I didn't make it, it wasn't an invention. It's not something that somebody else can't just find. It's there. It exists. You didn't make it. It doesn't make any sense that somebody can patent something that's existed for tens of thousands of years, millions of years, a cancer gene. So this patent will, I'm glad that it's struck down so people can do research on cancer and be able to fight something that is hindering people all over the world and be able to cure people of cancer rather than locking it up and asking and putting out their hand and asking for money because they found something. Not they made it, not they invented it, not that they came up with a clever thing. They did just found it. Maybe the way to cure cancer, maybe that's acceptable under the current rules of patents, but not something you just find. You didn't make it. It doesn't make any sense, and I'm glad that Judge Sweet actually came through with this. It's wonderful. Copyright news from the U.S. New litigation campaign quietly targets tens of thousands of movie downloaders sent in by Mind Inversion. In what may be a sign of things to come, more than 20,000 individual movie torrent downloaders have been sued in the past few weeks in Washington, D.C. federal court for copyright infringement. A handful of cases have already settled, and those who haven't are creating some havoc for major ISPs. The lawsuits were filed by an enterprising D.C.-based venture, the U.S. Copyright Group, on behalf of an ad hoc coalition of independent film producers. So far, 5 lawsuits have been filed against tens of thousands of alleged infringers of the films Steam Experiment, Far Cry, Uncross the Stars, Gray Man, Call of the Wild 3D. Here's an example of one of the lawsuits over U-Bowl's Far Cry. Another lawsuit targeted 30,000 more torrent downloaders on 5 more films is forthcoming, we're told, and all this could be a test run that opens the floodgates to massive litigation against the millions of individuals who use BitTorrent to download movies. The genesis of this legal campaign occurred in Germany when lawyers from the U.S. Copyright Group were introduced to new proprietary technology by German-based Guardly IT that allows for real-time monitoring of movie downloads on torrents. Yeah, it's called a torrent client. I can see people downloading as well. They show up as IP addresses. It's not that hard. According to Thomas Dunlap, a lawyer at the firm, the program captures the IP addresses based on the timestamp that a download had occurred and then checks against the spreadsheet to make sure the downloading content is the copyright-protected film and not a misnamed film or trailer. I guess it does MD5 sums or something based on an already downloaded copy of the film, so okay, maybe that's something, but I mean, the same thing is you can just download it and check it. Not that hard. For the past couple of years, using the technology, content producers have been talking to German and UK courts to identify and sue pirates using torrents. Jeffrey Weaver, another lawyer at the firm, claims these efforts have been successful. One example cited is a limited release German film whose producers recovered $800,000 through litigation. Gerdarly said its German lawyers agreed to let the U.S. copyright group tie out the system in the United States, where BitTorrent users have gotten a pass up until now. So this looks like it's the new income resource for movies. So if you would like to make a lot of money with a movie, all you have to do is make a movie, no matter how bad it is, give it a really exciting name, put it up on the torrents, and, you know, have access to this program that, you know, does some time stamps and gets IP addresses, take the people to court, and you'll be rolling in it. You don't even have to put it out in the theaters. You just have to make sure that people are downloading it and take them to court. You can watch the money roll in. It's just that easy. You don't need to keep up with the times. You don't need to market your movie any better. You don't need to, you know, make really good movies or really successful movies in 3D, like, say, Avatar, that's made $3 billion on its own. We'll have a little story about that later. A free speech news from Australia. Australian government adds WikiLeaks to banned website list. Now, did we say that this would happen, or did we say that this would happen? This doesn't sound like child pornography to me, WikiLeaks. No, it doesn't seem like there's probably any child pornography on WikiLeaks. This is sent in by Sean Kennedy. The Australian Communications Regulator has issued a stark warning that websites who link to banned hyperlinks are liable to fines up to Australian $11,000 a day. The news came after Webform Whirlpool was threatened with a fine for posting a hyperlink to the blacklisted anti-abortion website. One of the newest additions to Australians' blacklisted hyperlinks is WikiLeaks, the website that publishes anonymous submissions or sensitive info on everything from corporations, religion, and governments. The blacklisting of certain web pages of the site have come about after WikiLeaks posted a list of websites at the tail end of 2008 that compromised the secret internet censorship list from Denmark. On this list were over 3,500 websites that were censored or banned in the country. While Australia's list of black sites currently stands at 1,370, the Sydney Morning Herald reported that the list could increase to about 10,000 sites, most of which are illegal pornographic content, but could also include sites that house incendiary political discussions, such as maybe WikiLeaks. The government is embarking on a deeply unpopular and troubling experiment to fine-tune its ability to censor the internet, said communications spokesman Senator Scott Ludlam of Australia's opposition party Greens. If you consider this kind of net censorship in the context of Australia's anti-terror laws, it paints a disturbing picture indeed. On its website, WikiLeaks, which leaked the news that the government had banned it for leaking information, simply said, "The first rule of censorship is that you cannot talk about censorship." Currently, it is not illegal for internet users in Australia to click on sites found on web blacklist. The people targeting by the Australian Communications and Media Authority are webmasters linking out to the sites that the government have flagged as inappropriate. This could all change, however, if a mandatory internet filtering censorship scheme is implemented, something that has been debated at the moment. So, the slippery slope has started sliding in Australia. And we'll be watching for the fallout that occurs. They've gone nuts. They've started adding things that they just don't like in Australia. Rather than, you know, child pornography and violent websites and things like that, they've just been starting to add websites that they just don't like. So, yep, called it, and it's coming. Patent news from Australia. Thumbs down for software patents in New Zealand. Sent in by Mind Inversion. Open source software champions have been influential in excluding software from the scope of patents in the new patents bill. Clause 15 of the draft bill, as reported back from the Commerce Select Committee, lists a number of classes of invention which should not be patentable and includes a subclause, a computer program is not a patentable invention. We received many submissions concerning the patentability of computer programs, said the committee in the preamble to the bill. Under the Patents Act of 1953, computer programs can be patented in New Zealand, provided they produce a commercially useful effect. Open source or free software has grown in popularity since the 1980s. Protecting software by patenting it is inconsistent with the open source model, and its proponents oppose it. A number of submitters argued that there's no inventive step in software development, as new software inevitably builds on existing software. Software can still be protected by copyright and by the terms of its license. A requirement for a genuine inventive step, a development that would not be obvious to a person skilled in the appropriate field, is a feature of the patents bill, which in general imposes tighter requirements than the existing act before a patent can be obtained. Some submitters felt that computer software should be excluded from patenting protection, as software patents can stifle innovation and competition and can be granted for trivial or existing techniques. In general, we accept the position, the committee says. So another round of applause for New Zealand for its patent rules for software. Thank you very much, New Zealand, and hopefully other people wake up to this as well, that it is stifling creativity by locking down creativity itself. You can't build on things that you're not allowed to build on. How is society going to advance if it cannot build upon its inventions by the people that have invented it? You're going to just lock up inventions and you'd have to pay the toll, and that's just going to lock things down. And your country is not going to progress. The countries that are going to progress are countries like New Zealand, who is able to build on creativity. Creativity upon creativity builds new works, and that is what it's all about. Progression, not restriction, not locking things up. And more good news from privacy, from news from Israel. So there's a lot of good news, actually, not all bad. Israeli Supreme Court, talk backers needn't be exposed in libel cases sent in by DC. Surfers who post comments on websites scored a victory in Israel's Supreme Court last week. The vice president of the country's highest court, Eliezer Rivlin, the Justice Edmund Levy, handed down a majority ruling that internet service providers cannot be forced to disclose the identity of anonymous posters, even at the behest of a person who claims that he has suffered damage from the comments. Justice Eliakim Rubinstein held a minority opinion that the courts did have the power to order the identity of anonymous posters to be revealed. The ruling ended the appeal that Ramig Moore, an alternative medicine practitioner, he wanted to sue surfers who have left derogatory comments on a Ynet news story for libel. Among other things, unidentified surfers called him a charlatan and a thief. Another wrote, "Rami Moore, you're getting pretty annoying putting fake messages in every forum. You aren't even a practical nurse." Since the posters were anonymous, identifying them would have required a court order. Moore, therefore, motioned the court order Ynet, a communications company, Barak, to identify the posters, a technical matter involving finding and disclosing their internet protocol addresses. The magistrate's court of Haifa and the Koryat rejected his motion more than motioned the Haifa district court for permission to appeal. In April 2007, Judge Isaac Amit, today a high court justice, ruled that the court could intervene in the case of a libelous comment. Even online anonymity had been abused. In a long ruling, Amit said the first test before exposing the identity of the anonymous poster was whether the petitioner could sue the poster if his identity was known. But Amit added that there had to be another element before exposing anonymous poster's identity, such as good faith on the part of the claimant. Another question bore examination. Amit said whether the claimant is a public personality or private individual. The intensity of the hurtful expression, whether it was a one-off event or methodical, and the nature of the forum or website and more. So great news on behalf of that in Israel. So protection for privacy going on there. Why can't we have this kind of thing around the world so people can't just shut down speech that they don't like? Now, if it like they said there, if it was an ongoing harassment or something like that, that's a bit more reasonable. But if it's a one-off comment, like somebody that says that he doesn't like the person, that he's a faker or something, then that's an opinion. You can't just shut down people that say they don't like another person and sue them and drag everybody out into court. People have a little bit of right to privacy before reprisals against them, so that they don't get attacked by the public. Privacy news from the U.S. Federal judge finds NSA wiretaps were illegal. Now, I thought this was an April Fool's joke. It's like, no, they'd never do that. But, yep, it's illegal. What they did was illegal. A federal judge ruled Wednesday that the National Security Agency's program of surveillance without warrants was illegal. Seems reasonable that you can't just go and record everything you want anywhere, anytime you like. Rejecting the Obama administration's effort to keep shrouded in secrecy, one of the most disputed counterterrorism policies of former President George W. Bush, in a 45-page opinion, Judge Vaughn R. Walker ruled that the government had violated a 1978 federal statute requiring court approval for domestic surveillance when it intercepted phone calls of Al Haramain, a now defunct Islamic charity in Oregon, and of two lawyers representing it in 2004. Declaring that the plaintiffs have been subjected to unlawful surveillance, the judge said the government was liable to pay them damages. The ruling delivered a blow to the Bush administration's claim that its surveillance program, which Mr. Bush secretly authorized shortly after the terrorism attacks of September 11, 2001, was lawful. Under the program, the National Security Agencies monitored Americans' international email messages and phone calls without court approval, even though the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, or FISA, required warrants. So the government is not above the law, even though they make the law. So that is very good news on behalf of privacy. Your bits are a little bit more secure today, people in the U.S. Only a little bit. Copyright news from the U.S. EA editor criticizes Command & Conquer for DRM, sent in by Mind Inversion. EA.com's editor-in-chief and blogger, Jeff Green, like many, since launch, was burned by Command & Conquer 4's DRM, which required one to be online at all times to play. Unlike Ubisoft's latest experiment, the scheme offers many online features for single-player and multiplayer, per the global player progression system. Nevertheless, Green hasn't been having a good experience. Green wrote on his Twitter account late last week, "Booted twice and progress lost on my single-player CNC4 game because my DSL connection blinked. DRM fail. We need new solutions." Continuing later, "Well, I've tried to be open-minded, but my net connection is finicky, and the constant disruption of my CNC4 SP game makes this unplayable. The story is fun, the gameplay is interesting, and different at least. But if you suffer from shaky, unreliable DSL, you've been warned." So that's good news on the DRM front, that the person who works for the company, the editor-in-chief of the company, is complaining about his own products and complaining about DRM. This is good news for people who don't want their systems to be locked down by corporations. This is freedom for your own hardware that you purchase to do with it what you want. Hopefully, some other game companies are watching this and paying attention that DRM is not the way to go. These are your customers that you're locking out of the own game that they paid money for. The other option to DRM and to pay for the game is to not pay for the game and forego the DRM that the pirates are stripping out, that you can get on the web for free. That is your competition. And if the people inside your own company are saying it's a bad thing, maybe it's a bad thing, and you should rethink it. In free speech news from Europe, EC to propose mandatory web blocking for child abuse sites. The European Commission will next week propose a directive designated to fight the sexual exploitation of children, but a clause obliging member states to block pedophile websites have sparked widespread criticisms from civil liberties advocates, a German government minister, and from within the Commission itself. The critics argue that blocking websites fails to eliminate the material that appears on the internet, and that by focusing on blocking instead of devoting efforts to the much tougher task of eliminating the odious material, the law will fail to have much impact in the world of online child abuse. Many also fear that the move to block abusive websites will open the door to further clampdowns on the internet, like WikiLeaks, and will undermine Europe's effort to encourage China, Iran, and other countries, like Australia, to permit openness on the internet. Home Affairs Commissioner Cecilia Malmström was advised earlier this week not to include website blocking idea from the draft law by German Justice Minister Sabine I can't say that last name. Before that, she was contacted by Justice, Fundamental Rights, and Citizenship Commissioner Vivian Redding, who also urged Malmstrom to drop the idea. Malmstrom defended the blocking plan in a letter to Redding this reading earlier this week. The draft directive proposes to strengthen the different mechanisms in order to block content, she wrote, adding that the law would block sites that can't be eliminated, such as those located outside the EU. Internet experts warn that blocking sites that exploit children won't work for three reasons. First, the website owner can easily find a way around the block by redirecting the site, or moving it, for example, through a different web server computer. Second, the people looking for this type of material can easily circumvent blocks on the websites they want to see using legal and easily available software tools. But most importantly, the creators of the disgusting images operate below the website level, using peer-to-peer network to distribute their material. All very good points, and also doesn't eliminate the underlying problem of the actual child abuse. The problem isn't the pictures. The problem is the child abuse. Don't go after the pictures, go after the problem, the people creating these pictures. Burying your head in the sand won't make it go away. You actually have to dedicate all this money and all these laws and all these resources to actually fighting the crime, not blocking it out of your view, not turning off the television, going somewhere else and doing something else. Actually go after the people. Stop dedicating resources to blocking this stuff and actually do something about it. It's getting me mad. And all these are seemingly to be whim laws that are being put in place to block undesirable websites, not the pornographic websites, not the child abuse websites, not the violent ones, but stuff that you don't like. It's already been implemented in Australia, and they blocked WikiLeaks, something that they're not very happy with seeing themselves or the people in Australia, and so they block it. And this is the slippery slope. And as soon as they get more of these laws in more of these countries, where Australia has already joined China and Iran and all the other countries, more and more first world countries, industrialized countries, are going to join this list on the big censorship wall of the internet, and we're all going to live in happy Disneyland of an internet, and there's going to be an underground internet that they won't even be able to touch. You're pushing it more and more underground and pushing people away from something that has been working perfectly for 30 years now or more, and destroying it by implementing laws and blocks and censorship that is unneeded in the name of protecting the children, when you're not protecting the children. You're just protecting your eyes from what's really happening out there. Copyright news from the U.S. Big content. Stopping P2P should be principal focus of IPZAR, sent in by Mind Inversion. Thanks to the recent Pro-IP Act, the U.S. has for the first time an intellectual property enforcement coordinator responsible for pulling together all the resources of the federal government. What should the IPEC be doing with her time and resources? Thanks to the recent Pro-IP Act, the U.S. for the first time is an intellectual property enforcement coordinator responsible for pulling together all the resources of the federal government. What should the IPEC be doing with her time and resources? The core content industries have an answer. She should turn the online world from a thieves' bazaar to a safe and well-lit marketplace by encouraging network admins to deploy bandwidth shaping, site blocking, traffic filters, watermark detectors, and deep packet inspection. According to the RIAA, MPAA, Directors Guild, Screen Actors Guild, and others, new IPEC Victoria Espinel should be embarked on nothing less than a quest to push back the tide of copyright theft. But as when anyone who has tried to hold back the tide can tell you, it's a tough job. Just ask Venice. The groups talk a good game about voluntary network initiatives and encouragement of a network admins and hosting providers. But they also demand a 120-day review to identify any legislative, regulatory, or policy change needed to move more effectively against this menace to our economy, society, and culture. The joint submission came yesterday, the last day to file comments with Espinel's office regarding the approach her work should take. As is Washington practice, everyone filed at the last moment to deny others from seeing and responding to their arguments. The filing on the creative community organizations is surprising in that it really has a single focus, online copyright theft. There's little apparent concern for anything else, just showing just how seriously these industries take the problem of online infringement. The language varies wildly between the apocalyptic, menace to our economy, society, and culture, and the melodramatic, the motion pictures, television programs, and music that our industry create are representation to the world, our freedoms, our culture, and our diversity. They are woven into the fabric of our culture and the part of our national heritage. Generations of craftspeople, film and recording artists, and creators have learned from and built on the creativity of generations before them, and they have built on industries that are like no other in the world. Some interesting words there. Building on the creativity when the same people are trying to implement longer and longer copyright laws. One of the Espinel's key interests was in gathering good data on IP infringement and what it costs the U.S. economy. She asked for metrics, mythologies, rigorous research. Many of these sorts of numbers are pretty transparently bogus. What she got from these core copyrighted industries was two pages that cited four reports, all done by the same guy at the same think tank. As for methodology, Espinel can go just look it up in the text of the cited report. So, on the other side, on the corporation side, they are lobbying very hard for the lockdown of the internet, just like many other countries are, to block things and tear down what the internet has become and turn it into another, what they described as a well-lit marketplace. They see the internet in dollar signs and not freedom and not sharing and not spreading ideas. They see it as a store. And that's what they want to turn the internet into, is a highly regulated store where they can shut down anything that they don't like using the DMCA and any other tools that they can come up with. So we have to fight against this and have to fight for our freedoms on the internet. Fight for the bits that you have and hold on to them. In copyright news from France, piracy up in France after tough three strikes law passed. Send in my mind inversion. France's toughest in the world internet disconnection law has yet to start cutting off P2P pirates, but the Hadopi law has been on the books long enough to see how its provisions are altering behavior. According to a team of French researchers, online copyright infringement is down on P2P networks, but it's up in areas that the law doesn't cover, such as online streaming and one-click download services like RapidShare. In fact, since the law has passed, the total infringing behavior has actually increased by 3%. Researchers affiliated with the University of Rennes in France's Brittany region have just released a paper based on 2,000 phone surveys with Brittany residents. The survey has found that 15% of P2P users have already stopped using such networks, even though the Hadopi has yet to start sending out its warning letters and disconnection notices. Good news for rights holders, perhaps, as these numbers will certainly skyrocket once the actual penalties are in place. But in a sign of how the situation is likely developed later this year, the researchers found that 2/3 of these former P2P users simply migrated to illegal streaming sites and HTTP-based download services. This is not a surprise. If you shut down one site, they will go to the next site. If you shut down a protocol, they will use another protocol. If you shut down all the protocols, they will go to encryption-based. It is not something you want to wage a war against. It is impossible to stop it unless you cut off the internet completely, which is what they are trying to do in France. So this is a very good warning sign to what is about to happen to anything that is going to be implemented through ACTA if they implement the three strikes law or any kind of increased warning system, however they describe it in ACTA. They don't say three strikes. They say, an increasing penalty. I can't remember the wording, but it's something like that. But it's, increasing enough to that you get cut off eventually. Even though they've denied all leaks, that they don't speak to leaks, but they won't release the... Anyway, I'll get off ACTA. Copyright news from the U.S., maybe I won't get off ACTA. Harvard profs trash ACTA. demand oversight and threaten lawsuit. Sent in by Mind Inversion, Harvard Law School professors Lawrence Lessig and Jack Goldsmith took the op-ed page of the Washington Post today to slam the Obama's administration's approach to the anti-counterfeiting trade agreement and to threaten a lawsuit if ACTA is signed without congressional oversight. The U.S. has positioned ACTA as an executive agreement rather than a treaty. Such a move means that ACTA doesn't need Senate approval, but it also means that the agreement should not alter U.S. law either. If you want to change the law, you go to Congress. Lessig and Goldsmith argue that ACTA, at least in its current leaked form, does involve ideas and principles not reflected in U.S. law. Example number one is a pretty poor choice. In our view, the professors say that ACTA could, for example, pressure internet service providers such as Comcast and Verizon to kick users offline when they or their children have been accused of repeated copyright infringement because of content uploaded to sites such as YouTube. As we've noted before, though, the language here comes from the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, already U.S. law. The leaked draft shows that ISP need policies in place to deter repeat infringement. A footnote suggests that the three strikes internet connections might be the one appropriate way to do this, but would not be required. The more fundamental complaint is that the president simply doesn't have the power to negotiate executive agreements on IP law and communications policy. So this is good to have these people on our side. If you've ever listened to Lessig or read any of his books, this is the premier expert in copyright law. This is the guy. So I'm very glad that he's taken up this fight if ACTA ever comes to the shore of the U.S. as law. Copyright news from the U.S. James Cameron, innovation trumps any piracy threat, sent in by DC. Nearly a year ago, Tech Dirt reader Parker Mason has submitted a story to us suggesting that the amazing visuals in 3D plus IMAX aspect of Avatar was a perfect example of adding value to movies that would give people a real reason to go to the theater. I actually kept that story open in a tab for months, intending to write it up, and never got around to it. Obviously, this is a commentary and not a real news story, but I thought it was interesting. And to be honest, I wasn't entirely convinced that Avatar would really get a huge reception. Don't I look foolish? Yes, Avatar obviously has been a blockbuster of blockbuster proportions, in part because of the exact point. People want a greater experience. I was certainly among those who ponied up for the full 3D IMAX version, and not the fake IMAX version either, thanks to a friend who reminded me of that bit of deception. It looks like James Cameron recognized all this as well. Nasty Butler 77 was the first of a bunch to point to Cameron's claim that innovation trumps piracy, which he made on stage at CTIA. He said, "In film, we definitely felt threatened by piracy," he said. "We saw that the music industry's crash and burn its efforts to stop it. But with 4G wireless and Moore's Law, you can't fight it. The music industry saw it coming. They tried to stop it, and they got rolled over," he said. "Then they started suing everybody, and now it is what it is." Let's see, I'm just going to skip down a little bit. "People are discriminating about the experience," he said. "They want to own it and have it on the iPhone when they want it, and they want the social experience of going to the cinemas. There are really different experiences, and I think they can all coexist in the same ecosystem." And, This is a very important story, and people are going to listen to this man because he has made more money with one movie than anybody else in the world ever has. He's almost made $3 billion, more than some country's GDP. So this is very significant of this fact that he is recognizing that you have to compete with piracy. You can't shut it down. You can't legislate it away. You can't arrest people, throw them in jail, cut off their internet, because it doesn't matter. It's so proliferated, and people know that it is just wrong of that non-commercial sharing of information is something that people recognize as a right nowadays. And you have to compete against that by giving an experience that people are willing to pay for. Something that is large and interesting as Avatar in 3D on IMAX is something that people are obviously willing to pay to go see in the droves. Now, this is a lesson for all the other corporations out there that are trying to throw people in jail and cut off people's internet over something as simple as entertainment. Pay attention. Copyright news from Canada. EU demands Canada completely overhaul its intellectual property laws, sent by DC. Late last year, a draft of the European Union proposal for the Intellectual Property Chapter of Canada, EU Comprehensive Economic Trade Agreement, leaked online. The leak revealed that the EU was seeking some significant changes to Canadian IP laws. Negotiations have continued, and I have now, this is Michael Geis speaking, and I have now received an updated copy of the draft chapter, complete with proposals from both the EU and Canada. The breadth and demands are stunning. The EU is demanding nothing less than a complete overhaul of Canadian IP laws, including copyright, trademark, databases, patent, geographic indications, and even plant variety rights. Just going to skip down here. The EU demands compliance with the WIPO internet treaties, extension of the term of copyright to life of the author plus 70. Canada law is currently at life plus 50. Additional copyright term extensions for audiovisual works, anonymous works, and unpublished works. Term of copyright for broadcasts for at least 50 years. Canada wants to limit wireless broadcasts, while EU wants to cover everything. It just, the list goes on and on about the pressures being put on Canada by the EU. And I hope that Canada does not give in to pressure about these exorbitant changes that the EU wants to make to Canadian copyright laws, which are perfectly reasonable, if not more reasonable than they already should be, especially 70 years plus 50 years plus the author's life. I mean, people who died in the 1960s is still covered by this, by copyright law. That is, long enough to make your money for your grandchildren and give them a comfortable life. And if you haven't, well, your stuff's not selling. Time to give up. Copyright news from the UK. Usenet curator Newsbin hammered by UK court for infringement, sent in by Mind Inversion. Newsbin, a major indexer of Usenet news group binaries, have been hammered by a UK judge. Though the site claimed to be nothing more than a Google for Usenet that indexed all sorts of useful material, the judge found that the site operators knew about copyright infringement and did nothing to stop it, and in fact designed a site meant to encourage it. Newsbin made it simple for Usenet users to access binary files. Without the service, it could be tedious to collect and decode many parts of a video file. For instance, even finding them was difficult, since Usenet lacks good search features. Newsbin did the hard work of sorting through the Usenet uploads, collecting the useful information, and packaging it into tiny NZB files. Newsreaders that could handle such files would then be able to grab every part of a movie at once and reassemble it with minimal effort. Newsbin hosted no content of its own, but made it plenty of money from the curating service by charging 30 pence a week for access. According to the court documents, the company pulled down more than £1 million in 2009, with £415,000 doled out to its stakeholders and another £360,000 in profit. It almost goes without saying that much of the activity of the Usenet binary groups involves the illegal distribution of copyrighted works. Movie studios sued the site in London, a trial was held in February and March, and Mr. Justice Kitchen just handed over his verdict. Newsbin was liable for infringement despite hosting no files. This is a very interesting case that he hosted none of these files but made it available, these files, and I think the clincher was that he was making money. So that is a lesson. You don't make money on somebody else's copyrighted works. That's not how it works. You should not be making money off the backs of other people. But you didn't actually host any of these files. You just made it accessible. So if you started replacing the word Newsbin with the word Google, what is stopping people from going after Google and any of the other search engines? Well, it's money, because Google has bigger pockets and can hire stronger lawyers to fight your lawyers. So I don't know what to say about this one. It's very interesting. We're going to see more and more of these cases, but the clincher is, don't make money on somebody else's works. Because under current law, you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to make money on somebody else's stuff. So if you're going to do this, you don't make money on it. Here's another one. ISO hunt to pull torrent sites offline, likely to close. Copyright news from the U.S. Even though ISO hunt is run by a person in Canada, I didn't do a lot of research to get where ISO hunt is hosted. So it might be hosted in the U.S., which is why they're able to pull Gary Fung into the U.S. and have this court thing against him. The founder of popular BitTorrent site IsoHunt, Gary Fung, has been ordered to remove the torrent files for all infringing content, an order that could result in the site shutting down. U.S. District Judge Stephen Wilson issued the order last week after years of back and forth over the legality of IsoHunt and Fung's two other sites, TorrentBox and Podtropolis. Fung claims that he's still hoping for an agreeable resolution that won't result in IsoHunt closing its doors. But for now, things aren't looking good for the torrent site. Judge Wilson's order follows a summary judgment against Fung in December 2009. At that time, Wilson said that Fung has completely failed to rebut the claims brought against him by the MPAA. The movie studios have brought in expert witnesses stating that the statistical sampling of the content and server logs showed that nearly all the content infringing copyrights, about half of the downloads, were made within the U.S. Fung dismissed this as junk science, but did not present any sort of evidence showing that this wasn't a valid approach. Fung previously tried to argue that his sites were just another search engine that happened to pick up copyright content, but the studios countered with evidence that his search code was specifically tuned to find copyrighted material. Now Fung is stuck between a rock and a hard place as he tries to find a way to comply with his injunction without shutting down. Judge Wilson has barred Fung from creating, maintaining, or providing access to categories with torrent files, search results with torrent files, or any similar files using or based on infringing related terms. So this is another example of another person providing access to things that don't exist within the realm of their site. They don't host these files. They have the torrent files and they index them, such as something that Google would do. And one of the interesting ones was looking at the server log files and what people were downloading. So they're basing off what his website is about based off how people are using his website. So if everybody on the internet started using Google to download copyrighted works and had a majority of the use of Google downloading copyrighted works, that argument could go against Google as well, or any kind of website as well. So I'm not sure if that's the best argument, but the other arguments were somewhat interesting, that it was specifically geared towards copyrighted material. But if he didn't upload this copyrighted material and his users were the ones uploading the copyrighted material and he just wasn't doing anything to prevent it, are we all complicit in not being able to doing anything to prevent being uploading these copyrighted works? Just because I didn't go in and flag these copyrighted works, am I complicit in this trial? Not that I use IsoHunt, but you know, the arguments are a little bit weaselly, I find, and they don't hold a lot of water, really. And how people use your site is really dictating how people perceive your site. So if people started, you know, doing something with one of my sites, like say my forum started uploading links to torrent sites that had copyrighted content that people didn't want you downloading, or uploaded pictures that were copyrighted, all of a sudden I would be in trouble because I didn't have the time to go and seek these things. So really they're setting up a case to be able to shut anybody off the internet by their actions of their users, which is a little bit fishy. I can see where they're coming from, but I really don't like the angle that they're playing here. In privacy news from the U.S., threat level piracy, crime, and security online. Google, Microsoft push feds to fix privacy laws. Sent in by DC. A coalition of the net's biggest online service providers, including Google and Microsoft, are joining with the top internet rights groups to demand Congress to modernize national privacy laws. Among the reforms pushed by the so-called Digital Due Process Coalition is requirement that the law enforcement get warrants from a judge when they want to force companies to turn over your emails, documents, and location data. But despite issuing clarion call to change privacy laws, none of the companies that are pushing citizens to store more and more sensitive information online announced any change to their own practices. The coalition announced its four principles in a conference call with reporters Tuesday. The group says they briefed the White House, FBI, and Congress on the proposed changes and expect hearings this year. Congress isn't expected to act before 2011 because of a crowded legislative agenda. Changes in technology dictate the need to update the nation's electronic privacy law, known for the 1986 Electronic Communications Protection Act, according to Jim Dempsey of the Center for Democracy and Technology. So this is very interesting. I'm glad that heavy hitters like Google and Microsoft are trying to get laws changed for privacy concerns of citizens so that ISPs don't just roll over when somebody flashes a badge and says, give me all your log files, that they have to actually go and get a warrant so that the ISPs aren't intimidated into doing these things, which harkens back to the wiretapping that was now found illegal because some of the companies just rolled over and said, yes, you can have all our log files. I know you don't have a warrant, but you know, these laws should be put in place so that they do have to get a warrant to get these kinds of private information so that people aren't intimidated by the police and people aren't intimidated by law officials trying to get private information that they should be keeping private. If you don't have a good reason that's been approved by a judge to hand over the information, maybe that information shouldn't be handed over. In Pirate Party news, Pirate Party UK criticizes the Digital Economy Bill Clause 18. The government has released details of their alternative to the controversial Clause 18 of the Digital Economy Bill, which allows injunctions to be brought against websites that infringe copyright or merely link to other websites that do. The new clause maintains that web blocking provisions, but significantly lowers the bar for injunctions, now only requiring that it's likely that infringing content can be obtained from an online location, made available from an online location, or can be used to access one of these locations. There's also a new possibility for injunctions to be brought against locations that have fulfilled these criteria in the past, allowing for the retroactive blocking of websites. Commenting on the new wording, Tim Dobson, Pirate Party PPC for the Manchester Gorton constituency said, "This confirms our worst fears. Websites such as Google, Facebook, Wikipedia, YouTube, and others will be at serious risk from being blocked in the UK, and now only a bare minimum of shaky evidence will be required to do it." Clause 18 has replaced the equally controversial Clause 17 in the bill as originally drafted that allowed the Secretary of State to amend the Copyright Design and Patents Act of 1988. This newly proposed clause brings back the dangerous power, leaving it to the Secretary of State alone to whether or not new regulations are justified or proportionate. The Pirate Party UK condemns the government's draconian and damaging proposals and calls for the Digital Economy Bill to be dropped, pending a review of copyright law. Pirate Party pillages private papers. It's from the Pirate Party of Australia, sent in by Mind Inversion. Recently, a document that is alleging a consolidated discussion paper of the anti-counterfeiting trade agreement was leaked in full to the internet. Everybody knows about that. The one that from January, the leak that was from the discussions from January. Today, due to the complete lack of transparent public consultation process with the ACTA, Pirate Party Australia will also be mirroring this controversial document in order to fuel public awareness and debate surrounding government transparency. And they've got a link on their website, of course. The Anti-Counterfeiting Trade Agreement, or ACTA, is a secret agreement in negotiation between the EU, Canada, the US, Japan, New Zealand, Australia, and other nations. While it does propose some legitimate anti-counterfeiting measures, the copyright-related chapters are the result of commercial interests seeking to limit society's right to material designated to enhance our culture. So good on them for mirroring this and stepping up to the plate to mirror this document. So they're kind of almost goading on the ACTA to either ask them to take it down, which would confirm that it's real, or confirm that they just want it down, or to put forth a real document that what is the real ACTA agreement, so that they can dispel any leaks if they don't agree with these so-called, they don't talk about the leaked versions, so why don't they put up a real version so we can actually discuss it? David Crafty said, "The most alarming part of these proposals is the complete lack of judicial oversight, allowing the copyright owners to play both judge and jury, while forcing ISPs to take on the role of executioner," said David Crafty, Pirate Party President of Australia. Pirate Party Australia has twice attempted to gain ACTA documents under a Freedom of Information request, but both were rejected. And the next story, pirates protest internet blacklist, also from Australia. Protesters from Australia's Pirate Party have gathered in Sydney to demonstrate against the government's planned internet filter. Around 30 demonstrators organized a flash mob-style performance, symbolically gagging themselves. This is the sort of censorship you would expect from China or Iran. It is being roundly condemned by the U.S. State Department and Google for good reason, a Pirate Party statement said. A press release from the Pirate Party also expressed outrage that the Australian Communications and Media Authority has allegedly blacklisted whistleblower website WikiLeaks. ACMA confirmed that it has investigated pages on the WikiLeaks site, which publishes documents otherwise kept secret by government organizations, and said it had blacklisted them. A spokesperson for ACMA told SBS that the organization does not blacklist entire sites, only specific pages. He could not discuss what content the blacklisted pages contain. So we can't tell you which pages they're blacklisted, we can't tell you what was on them, but they were blacklisted, and that's why they're protesting in Australia and gagging themselves, because there is no more freedom of speech there. It is gone because they can blacklist whatever they want, whenever they want, and not talk about it or even what it was. Now, they were sent in the free music and media section, some stuff sent in by Jay, some open source software alternatives to well-known commercial software. So you don't need to play into the games of the corporations. They're all our alternatives while they last. One's at osalt.com and the other one's opensitesolutions.com. I'll put these in the forums. And also some free Creative Commons licensed entertainment for you. Some podcasts, some stories being read out. Skatepod.org, pseudopod.org, podcastle.org. Some stuff for you to listen to while you're going to work or to school. And I've got a closing track, as mentioned in the last story, about Google Australia condemning Australia's filtering. And this is conducted on CNN. I've just got a little clip here, but I've linked to it in the forums. You can go and listen to the full thing. And this has been sent in by DC. So remember, if any of these stories have interested you, please check out your local pirate party to find out more about what you can do to help preserve your rights and freedoms. If you have news stories you'd like to hear on the show, questions or comments, just head over to piratepartyradio.com and submit them through the form on the website. Thank you for listening. Until next time, this has been James O'Brien for Pirate Party Radio.
What's being proposed here is a mandatory ISP filtering regime. If it goes ahead, Australia will be alone amongst Western democracies with a proposal that is both mandatory, there is no opt-out, and very broadly scoped. So the scope of content to be filtered, as you said, does cover some truly objectionable material, but at the same time, it could cover material that could inform public debate on social and politically controversial issues. And we just think governments don't have the right to block that information.